when you're kind of forging a new type of product or a new way to look at a problem, I think you have to get someone on the phone.
Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 136 of Rogue Startups. I am broadcasting today from the beautiful sunny backyard of my parents' house. Craig, how the heck are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. So I think we have to share the story for why you're temporarily homeless.
Okay, sure. So for the past, I don't know, since basically the kids got out of school, so right around the beginning of June, we started having our floors refinished because when we moved into the house, we have hardwood floors on the main level. My wife is really hating the carpet that was there. So we decided, all right, they're looking pretty bad. It's time to get them refinished. So we move all the furniture out. We have them lace in a bunch of new hardwood boards. That all looks great. Takes a little while. So that's like done on June 7th, and then they sand and all that good stuff. And then afterwards, this is the part that sucks. This is where they have to like kick you out of the house. They stain the wood, and then they put on finish. And it's either the water-based finish, which doesn't have a lot of stuff coming out of it, or it's like the polyurethane, but the polyurethane lasts a lot longer. So, of course, you know, we pick the polyurethane naturally. And my wife is also a little sensitive to the chemical smell, so we did the three coats, and then afterwards she's like, whoa, that's really strong. I'm like, okay, well, let's extend our stay at this because we got an Airbnb to get out of there while they were doing this.
Yeah.
Let's extend it another day. Okay, sure. And then we get to that day, and it turns out that, oh, look at that. It's been really hot outside. Guess what happens to polyurethane when it gets really hot? It actually bubbles. Uh-huh. So they had to like strip part of the floor off and sand it down and throw on another coat of it, which added another 2 days to it. Yeah, I'm so done with being out of the house at this point. It's like it's a vacation that's not fun.
Yeah, that's – oh, man, that's tough. That's tough. We've done a lot of home improvement stuff in the past. We're renting now here in France. But, oh, man, it's always like – well, it's like building software, right? It's like take two steps forward and three steps back, and just the unexpected disasters that happen like around every corner just seem endless. So it just takes longer and costs more and everything. So I feel your pain, but I'm sorry you're going through that. It's tough.
I think we're getting close to the end of the tunnel here, and I'm pretty sure that the light I see is not a train. So I feel like we're getting close, but like, yeah, I mean, we were at the Airbnb, we couldn't extend anymore. And so like, I asked my parents if we could come hang out over here. So we totally like turned their life upside down. Three kids, two dogs, the two of us. Yeah. But
it's a lot of family, man.
That's a lot of family. But on the plus side, I'm sitting here in a gorgeous shady backyard. It's like 73 degrees out here or something like that. It's perfect temperature. And I'm broadcasting on our podcast, so life is good.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. Well, I spent the weekend, so we missed podcasting last week, all due to my fault. I spent last week in
That's
London.
The story we'll stick to anyway.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm sure it would have been challenging for both of us to pull anything off last week. I was bouncing around location to location. So
last week was a mess, huh? So I spent the last part of last week and over the weekend in London. We had a podcasting kind of one-day workshop that I presented at on Saturday, which was really cool. And then spent the last half of Saturday and Sunday on like a little mini founder retreat. So I stayed an extra day in London and... yeah, it was really great, man. I mean, I have been listening to like Rob and Sherry talk about founder retreats and just time to get away and unplug and mentally kind of unwind so you can actually think about stuff in a productive way. And it was a lot of what kind of I've heard and read about, you know, just taking time to get away. It was ended up being, I think, really productive of just kind of thinking and planning and being strategic. And particularly, I think this is something I hadn't heard, but it was a little lucky, was it was on a weekend, which was harder for like Amanda and the kids because I wasn't here, you know, when they're out of school and home all weekend. But for me, I didn't have like any pressure of feeling like I needed to, quote, work, right? Because it was like a Tuesday and I wasn't around to, you know, talk to the team or answer support emails or whatever. I would have felt a lot more kind of guilty and probably not able to really unwind as much. So for those of us who are kind of early on where we need to be involved in the business, if you're talking about or thinking about taking a founder retreat, I would say look at doing it on the weekend or a holiday so that you don't have that kind of nagging feeling in the back of your mind, because it's hard enough to unplug. If you have that, it's probably impossible. But I loved it. I definitely recommend it. I'll probably try to do it once a year. I think it's about all I want or need or care to try to take away from the family. But yeah, it was really great. So it was a nice first experience.
Nice. I haven't scheduled mine yet for 2018. We've been trying to push through all of this stuff with the kids being out of school. I'm glad we didn't try this whole floor finish thing while they were in school. That would have been just like a nightmare on top of a nightmare. Logistically, trying to get them up and feed them and get them to school and picking them up afterwards and snacks and all that other stuff. I mean, you sort of take for granted when you have a solid home base and that there's a certain level of stability in your life that becomes a problem. So, yeah, I mean, scheduling a founder retreat is probably not going to happen for me until fall at this point, but I definitely need to get one in this year as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how hard it is just to sit back and think objectively about stuff. And I think it's tough to do at home, even if you have a bunch of time. And for me, it's always busy, quote, working, right? And so like just to take time in a different environment was really nice. So I feel very fortunate to be able to do that and hopefully have some good stuff to show for it here soon. So, yep, pretty cool.
Nice. So tell me where you actually spent the retreat. Like where, what physical location were you at?
So I was in London. So like kind of in town, which, you know, I think a lot of people talk about like go to nature or go to the country or something like that. And we live like in the country. I mean, we live in a little village. So for me, it's always like really nice and like a big change to go to a big city. So, so we stayed in Airbnb. And for most of like Sunday, which was like my real retreat day, I spent it walking and I rented a bike and I kind of rode around London some. They have like these bikes you can rent just like for an hour or something and it's really cheap. So I rented that for a couple hours. And then just found like a handful of spots where I would stop and get my little notebook out and think about stuff. And I just made a bunch of lists and kind of revised those lists and kind of ended up having big picture goals, things that I wanted to do. And then like more finer kind of steps that I thought I needed to take on the way there. And by the end of it, it was a pretty decent, like 1, 2, and 3 year vision and some real details around, kind of what I needed to, where I needed to go on those kind of intermediate steps.
Nice. Yeah. It's always good to hear what other people do in that situation there. So like when I've done it, I've tried to, you know, sort of split my day up into like a morning coffee shop-ish kind of time and then an afternoon beer garden, brew pub kind of time. And then maybe there's some outdoor time somewhere in between those two. But I like to have it in more of a public space where there's, you know, refreshments there. So I don't really have to think about the food thing. I don't have to like make that a specific quest or a thing on the side, but I can just sort of sit there and think. And if it's kind of noisy, you can put on headphones and kind of adjust the noise to whatever your desired level is. I've got noise canceling headphones, so that helps quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear what worked for you and what works for me. And I know Rob Walling has talked about his publicly, and his is similar to what I do it actually here, where he'll spend some time out on a beach and then some time in a coffee shop and then some time out in maybe like a bar or something like that later, and then maybe come back to wherever he's staying and then spend some time here. I know Mike Tabor did one like entirely up in a cabin. And he said that one was actually really hard because there was so much that he found that he got distracted by, like just doing dishes and preparing meals and doing this and doing that. And so when I took mine, I was like, I want to avoid those things so that I'm spending more time on the retreat and less time on the logistics. And I think that was a valuable takeaway from that. So, yeah, if you're planning on doing a retreat, would love to hear what is working for you, because it's different for everybody. You know, obviously Craig going to a big city was not what I would have necessarily picked, but it worked for him because he's living out in the sticks there in Annecy. So
yeah. And I totally think that, yeah, whatever the setting is right for you obviously makes the most sense for your situation, but a little variety definitely helps. Cause I could see, you know, if you're holed up in a cabin or an Airbnb or something like that the whole time, I would just get kind of unproductive after a while, I think.
So when I asked Rob about it, he was saying that he can't stay in one place all day. So he changes it up so that it kind of breaks up his mindset. And I kind of felt the same way when I was doing it. And I can totally see that, like just sticking around in one place would kind of drive me nuts. I think it'd be fine for the first 3 hours or so. And then afterwards I'd be like, all right, well, I'm ready to change locations now. What the hell's going on here? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The stimulation really helps you, I think, get perspective.
Yeah, and it's also awkward to go to a bar at 9 in the morning, so there's that too.
It's only for some of us, right? Oh, man. So, yeah, so today we are talking all about selling. I am super excited. I know that we both have been doing our fair share of demos lately, and yeah, I think this is a really important thing that probably isn't talked about as much as maybe it could be. In some circles, I mean, I think a lot of people and a lot of us come from really technical backgrounds where getting on a live phone call with somebody to show them your life's work is a little challenging and intimidating. But I think when you look at especially like higher priced or more complex sales, getting on the phone and doing demos or doing sales calls with people is super important. So, yeah, I think, Dave, so we're going to walk through not just kind of how to do demos or how we've been doing demos, but really like when you should do a demo versus just have like self-service signed up on your website, right?
Yep. And so I think the thing that prompted this discussion here and why I was interested in doing this podcast is that unlike you, I mean, this is like demos and sales. This is your wheelhouse, man.
Yep.
And I am just like a fish out of water here. I just did my first demo for Recapture this last week, and I've got a bunch more scheduled after Shopify Unite. I've made contact with agencies and I'm getting these things all set up. And at first I was like super excited. I'm pumped. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do demos. And then as it got closer to the first demo, I was like, fuck, I'm going to do a demo. What am I going to do? I mean, and then I like started looking around at a bunch of stuff and I'm like, all right, calm down, Dave. You got this. You can do this. But at the same time, it still didn't feel like it wasn't comfortable. It wasn't natural. It wasn't normal for me. You know, the experience of it was a little bit rambly, I guess. You know, and it's funny because we had done these demo notes before I had done my first demo. And I was like, oh, thank God, Craig. Thank you for writing all this down. And I still went through it. And even though I had that structure and I had that preparation in there, I still was – feeling like I kind of stumbled. Like it was like, well, we can get into the specifics of this here in a minute, but yeah, I mean, it still wasn't perfect. I feel like I got a long way to go on this, and you know, having done public speaking and presentations before, a lot of it's just practice. You got to do the same thing over and over again to just have it kind of roll out and be super smooth and polished and feel like you're on message and on point. But I was definitely not on point for that first demo, and yet somehow I didn't totally botch it. So,
well, I think the like one kind of lesson or tip there might be to do a demo to somebody who isn't a potential customer. So do it to a friend or a colleague or, you know, a spouse mastermind or group. A partner or whatever, mastermind group, and just say, hey, I want to pitch you. Please give me your feedback, both on kind of content and approach and tone and format and all that kind of stuff. Because yeah, it's better to have kind of a cold version of that rather than just coming out of the gate when it really matters and real money's at the line, real money's on the line. So yeah, I would definitely practice live one time at least, before you really get going in front of a real potential customer.
Yeah. The good news was the first customer that I had was actually, I'll say a friendly audience. It was a friend of a guy that came to Big Snow Tiny Conf. It was a colleague. So the guy that went to Big Snow Tiny Conf, he and I already had a relationship. I saw him again at Unite, and he hooked me up with this person in his agency that does the e-commerce stuff. So, you know, in general, I felt like it was a pretty friendly audience already. You know, they were kind of new to the whole thing. So there was definitely some education involved, and I was excited to talk to them about that. But yeah, I mean, if I had done it in a colder, more hostile environment, I would be feeling much less good about the end result of that for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's start with the question that you just proposed a minute ago, and I totally derailed with the side conversation. When should you actually do a demo here versus just having people sign up for your product? Well, the first reason would be if you have a really complicated product to get somebody onboarded. So maybe it's not straightforward. Maybe there's a certain amount of configuration involved. Maybe there's just a lot of different ways that the workflow could go depending on what the signup process looks like. Maybe they're an agency versus a regular store, and the onboarding workflow looks very different for those, or you want to make sure that the different steps get followed. That's the kind of thing where a demo can really sort of clear that stuff up. Another one might be like having a high lifetime value, where you want to make sure that if the customer is a very valuable customer, that you can clearly communicate the ROI and the actual value of your product in a way that maybe a website doesn't. Because, you know, I don't know about you, Craig, but when I'm browsing websites, I don't know that I give it like 100% of my attention. I'm not even sure I give it 50% of my attention. I sort of look around, and if something catches my eye, then I'm like, oh, then I might dial it up to 75%. But even then, I'm still very distractible, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think with a demo, it's very different. You basically have them sitting there on a video call or audio call with you, and you're showing them stuff. So you have a very different presentation at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think that a lot of times these two things go together. So if a product is complicated, it probably has a high lifetime value, like if it kind of warrants being complicated. And both of those things really justify having a demo call or a sales call with somebody so that you can explain the value really clearly. Otherwise, I think what you risk is them getting in there, signing up for a free trial and saying, what the fuck is this? I can never do this. There's no way I'm going to pay $300 a month for this thing that's whatever, complicated, and APIs and all this kind of stuff. But I think if you can get someone on the phone and say, this is why we do this, and this is why you have to set this up like that, and the result is X, because that's really like what you're trying to get to is like, how can you solve the pain for these people in a really clear way and relay that value to somebody? So I think that like LTV, price, complicated app and setup and onboarding all go together a lot of times if it's all aligned properly. We've been doing sales or demo calls for Podcast Motor since like day one, and with Sales Camp as well, because I mean, in a lot of situations, like people are using the API to integrate the referral program into their marketplace or their app or their website or whatever. So it takes a bit of like, this is how you set it up, and this is how you kind of achieve the goal that you have with whatever the tool is. I would say the other thing, Dave, that I would do is look at your competition, right? So like in the email marketing space for e-commerce, are people doing request a demo on as their call to action on the website, or is it start your free trial? Because, you know, especially if they're tools that have been around a long time and you think that they have their stuff together, they probably have figured this out already, that like you need to do a demo to convert customers, or you can figure out how to onboard people just with self-service signup. Because if you can, I think you want to go with self-service signup if the conversion rate can only be achieved with sales calls, and that's what you have to result to. But you have to know that the number of new customers you can get on board in a month is going to be a lot lower that way.
Yeah, and I think some of that has to do with price point. So like if you look at the higher end email marketing tools that are in the e-commerce space, almost all of them are like click here for a demo. But the ones that are like at a lower range are all like sign up for a free trial now. So, yeah. You know, I think it has to do as much with the lifetime value as it does the onboarding factor of it. Because, you know, if you're talking Infusionsoft is complicated as hell. And you absolutely need a demo on there. And they want you to have that demo because not only can they specifically create a workflow that's tailored to you, which is something that we're going to talk about in a minute about what you want to do before the demo. They ask you a bunch of questions so that they can create a demo that's tailored to your needs. And then all of a sudden, light bulbs start going off in your head to say, hey, look, I totally get what this thing can do for me. And now I feel pretty jazzed about paying $300 or $500 or whatever it is a month that you're going to charge me for Infusionsoft and the $1,200 onboarding fee and God knows what else.
Yeah.
But that stuff only comes through in a demo. But if you're using something like Drip and you're just like, hey, I need to sign up for some basic workflows here because, you know, I need some tagging and I need this and I need that, and I already know what it is I need, I just need to sign up for it, then, you know, the demo is not where you want to go.
Yeah. So that's a good example because I know that even in the early days, they did a lot of demos, right? Rob did it and then Anna did it at Drip because it's tough to relay that value prop outside of a demo. Now they have enough people and enough education about marketing automation and tagging and workflows and all this kind of stuff. But man, I mean, when you're kind of forging a new type of product or a new way to look at a problem, I think you have to get someone on the phone, partially to explain what you're talking about, of like how to get onboarded and get the value. But also, I think especially when you're like early on in a product lifecycle, you need to talk to the customers to understand what they need, right? Because you think you know, but you probably don't, right? I mean, I still don't think I really know what people want from Sales Camp. And so we still have requested a demo as the call to action on the website and will for a long time probably because I still don't really, really get it. And until you really, really get kind of product market fit, I guess, you should be talking to as many people as possible, and you'll grow slow because of that. But I think ultimately you'll be in a better position.
Right, right. Which brings us to another one of the key reasons that you might want to do a demo instead of self sign up. You may have a product that's fairly simple, but if you don't understand how your customer's going to use it, if you don't understand what level of product market fit you have, if you don't understand what things your customers might also be suffering from, not just whatever obvious pain you've identified and think you've solved, or how that pain relates to the pain you've solved, you should probably do a demo. This was something that was recommended to me with Recapture at Big Snow Tiny Conf. Like, you should be getting on the phone regularly with people and doing demos with them, not because you don't have the ROI nailed here, but you probably need to figure out how can I differentiate myself given what that ROI is and what else the customer is really struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't understand your product roadmap, if you're not sure, like I had still have a ton of features that I'm like, well, which one is the most important one next? The only way I figure that out is by talking to the customers directly. So the demo call that I had, you know, I was kind of tossing out some things that I had been thinking about for direction for Recapture, and I got some positive signals back from the person I was talking to at the agency because she needed to be able to communicate something to her customers about how to improve their ROI. And it was more than just abandoned carts. And she, you know, was mostly focused on SEO and stuff and didn't really understand this whole space. So I kind of helped her understand a section of the e-commerce space that she wasn't as familiar with. And it also gave her some ideas about what she can do to offer additional value for their agency in addition to the expertise that they've already got. So that conversation back and forth suddenly made me think, oh, wait a minute, there's an e-commerce agency that's not doing like email marketing stuff here? Like I didn't realize that until I talked to them. They were mostly SEO focused.
Yeah.
So now I've got like a different pitch to say, hey, look, hey, here's some value I can add to you by telling you how to do this because, hey, that might not be your area of expertise, but it is mine, and I can tell you about that, and your customers will be thrilled to use this. Oh, and by the way, you get a referral bonus for signing them up. So, you know, it's a win-win-win, right? I get a new customer. They get some more value. Their customer gets actual more value out of them, the agency, and my product, and the agency looks good in the eyes of the customer. So yeah, everybody wins in that case. But I wouldn't have known that had I not sat there and done that demo and had that back and forth with them.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. We could go into a whole nother kind of episode about kind of questions to ask and all that. And maybe that's another episode is kind of how to ask good questions on demo or sales calls. But I wanted to walk through at least what we're doing. So we do have request a demo as the main call to action on the SalesCamp website right now. And wanted to walk through kind of that flow of kind of getting to the demo from when a potential customer comes to the website. So we have like the homepage of SalesCamp is on WordPress. So we use a gravity form. So we have a page with a gravity form that collects like name, email, company, company size, what type of referral rewards they want to give. So they want either like cash or credits or custom, like using an API or gift cards. And then in what time period do they want to implement this? And we have like, you know, yesterday I wish is one of the options, and then like 3 months or I'm just shopping. So that's an interesting one. And then we ask the number of people in the company, because at some point, you could look at this and say, if it's a big business, then take them to a live personalized demo. If it's a small business, you could ask like company size or annual revenue or something like that. Send them to, if it's a small company, send them to like a pre-recorded video or webinar or something like that as an early screening point. But I think if you're doing a lot of demos, then you have to do that. If you're not doing a lot of demos, then you just take everybody and do it live. So say everybody's live, we take them straight to a page with a Calendly form embedded on it. So like the success page from submitting the gravity form goes to a Calendly page where they can pick a time on my calendar. We use Uber Conference as the conferencing service that I use, but you can use Zoom. And then that's where the appointment takes place. And I have 3 days open on my calendar a week for demo calls for SalesCamp right now. So that's kind of how it works for us. I don't know. How are you doing demos, Dave? Is it just kind of like as they come or if they're requested, or how's that working for you?
Well, I'm much earlier in the process than you are, obviously. And I haven't nailed down all of those things. Like I didn't set up, I have a Calendly thing, but I haven't been setting that up. I've been going back and forth in email with them, setting up a time that's mutually good. Or a lot of times they'll just send me their Calendly link right away.
Yeah.
A lot of agencies already have this stuff. So they're like, here's my Calendly link. You tell me when, what works. And I'm like, great. I pick a time and it's good.
Yeah.
As for the conference thing, you know, I've got one scheduled on GoToMeeting. I've got one scheduled on Zoom. Somebody else set a Google Hangout. So everybody's all over the map. They're, you know, and they're the ones that are kind of driving it. I'm like, hey, I'm available on Skype or whatever. You know, I haven't set any of those things up. So most of the time with these agencies, they seem to have their own setups and they're just like, here, we'll just use this.
Yeah.
And that's fine as well. Like that wasn't a problem. The GoToMeeting was the first one I've got. I have another Zoom one later tomorrow, Thursday. I don't know. I have to look at my calendar. But yeah, it just totally depends. And I don't think the tech stack itself is super important. But I do think your intake form is super awesome. And in fact, after I did the demo, I was in the middle of the demo and I realized when she said something that I should have asked a series of questions before the demo. And I didn't do that.
Mm.
And yeah. And then when the demo was done, as I was like typing this, I'm like, oh, I should have asked this. But then she helpfully like threw that out in the middle of the demo and I was like, ah, I wish I had a little more time to prepare. But I managed to pull it out and I found the things that she was looking for specifically, which was all great. But yeah, you want to make sure that you are prepared for your demo as well, which I think brings us to the next section. And I didn't truly appreciate this until I had gone through the demo and then started facepalming several times going, oh, I should have had more time to prepare for that. Damn it, I wish I had asked that question first. You know, so this is where I'm going to defer to you and your expertise here and your experience. Like, so what would you say are like the pre-demo questions that you found really successful that make for a better demo right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, we ask some of those questions in the form. So I have a decent kind of lay of the land. And then we send in Calendly, you can send a pre-meeting question or pre-meeting email that has, for me, a couple questions And it really is like kind of why do they want to set up a referral campaign and what is the goal around that? And then I just leave a really open-ended question and say, based on what you know of SalesCamp, are there any questions and kind of referral marketing, are there any questions you have for me ahead of then, or is there anything in particular I should make sure I'm prepared to answer for you? So kind of try to leave the door open for them a little bit there. So that when I walk into the meeting, there shouldn't be any major questions. And the last thing I do is I say, please create an account before our call. There, we don't ask for credit cards, so it's no big deal for anybody to create an account, just so that you know kind of the lay of land and you know kind of what we're going to be talking about. I got that from, I requested a demo of Autopilot about a month ago, and they had a really nice kind of onboarding sequence there that said, make sure you create an account and a dashboard, you know, so because we're going to walk through your live dashboard on the call. So that was pretty cool.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
In my case, I think that's a fantastic idea. But for recapture, I found that it's they want to see like real data. They want to see either the demo, like we actually have a live demo on there. So what I did in my demo calls, I actually walked them through the live demo of recapture. And then the thing that they wanted to know was, oh, well, what about somebody in this industry or somebody in this other industry? And then I had to show some specific emails that they showed, like what was the content of those emails? Because that's not private information. That's really public. Because if you signed up for that thing on the website, you would get those emails,
mm-hmm.
receiving them no problem. But, you know, I don't show other people's analytics or something like that. I save that for the main demo. But, yeah, I mean, if I just let them go into a regular recapture account, it's all kind of blank and it's just the default emails. And so, you know, that didn't seem that interesting to me, but that's an interesting point. I guess it would depend on your product as to whether that worked or not. But for SalesCamp, I could see that that would work.
Yeah. So yeah, getting into the demos, once you're there, obviously show up on time and, you know, whatever. I don't use video like of myself, but that's something to think about. Like if you're going to use video, obviously, you know, take a shower that day and all that kind of stuff. Don't show up in your bathrobe. But I think a little bit of preparation before the call on your end goes a long way. So when I am setting up a demo, I have a new window in Chrome open with my app. A couple of slides I've put together to talk through kind of what we are and what we do on a high level. The customer's website, our marketing site, because they always have questions about pricing or where do I sign up or anything like that. And the app is open to our demo account because we walked through some stuff and I want to do it in our demo account. But I always open the call with like, kind of some general questions about like, hey, what are you trying to achieve and how did you kind of get to this point and things like that? Because I think the most important thing for us as people trying to sell to these customers is like hearing their problems, right? And like as much as you can without being a dick, like pour some salt on the wounds, right? Like as they say, oh, we got this problem. We have all these customers and like, you know, we just want to get more. And so that's like, you're like, yes, yes, yes. Hearing them say that is like the best thing ever, because then walking through the demo, you can say, and this is going to get you more customers because you're going to be able to do this and you can set it up with the API that way. And like, if they verbalize what their problem is to you, then it's a huge thing. So I always ask those kind of questions to start with.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that I wished I had done a little bit more of in advance, was finding out like what their goals were and what kinds of people that they talked to and stores that they specifically worked with. And I found that out in the middle of the call, but by then I didn't have that time to prepare. So I really wished I had done that. So I have a question for you about your pre-demo email. So you had said you send out the email beforehand. What kind of response rate do you get on that? Is it pretty high?
Yeah, it's pretty high. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, even I'll say on our demos, we get, I don't know, 10 or 15% of people that cancel, no show, reschedule, like at the last minute. So I'd say those just, you know, those people don't even convert to the demo to show up at the demo. And then half the people don't respond to that email. So yeah, I think that's decent.
So like 40% that are actually actively participating in that email. Yeah. Okay. I was just curious because I was thinking that in general, emails like that can easily get ignored. So I was trying to figure out like what kind of response rate you were getting as a result of that. And so for the ones that don't do that, do you repeat the questions at the beginning of the demo to try to get that information? Or do you just, you do? Okay.
Even if they do respond, I say, hey, I saw in your email you were talking about this. Can you share or kind of explain some more about what you're looking for or what you meant there?
Okay, so you use it as a means of following up at the beginning of the call, even if they didn't answer it. So you still try to get that information. Okay.
Because it's like it comes to the end of the call. So anyway, in the middle, you kind of show your stuff, right? And the best example of this, right, is for I think like Anna at Drip would build a workflow for you based on like what you need and in your account. So like she did all the work to onboard you in your account and saved it, and that's yours in your demo, in your actual Drip account. So like she did all the work of onboarding you. And we do the same thing. So we say, okay, I'm going to create the kind of referral campaign you want. What kind of reward are you looking for? Is it a percentage or a flat fee? And are you going to pay it in perpetuity or just once? And what kind of, cash or credit or whatever? And so we build all of that out. And then I say, okay, and this would be the stuff that you put on your website. And so it's like we've done all of the work other than kind of the integration part for them. And I think that. So we have a blog post we'll link to, but from Stelly at close.io, who's like the master of all this stuff, right? But he basically says, don't just show what your app can do because they can figure it out for themselves. Show how you can solve their problem. And so I think we try to do this as best we can of saying like, okay, this problem is solved and this is how we did it. So whatever that means for you, I think don't just like say, okay, and then you click this button and you go over here and then you select this, but say like, okay, this is your referral campaign. It's done. You just need to put this on your website and you'll start getting more customers. Or here's the email campaigns and we have these templates predefined for you to get your e-commerce customers, your abandoned shopping cart customers back. You would just, click this button to activate them in your email sequence. Like that, show them the solution, I think is kind of the goal.
Yeah, now I'm wondering how much I actually did that in my demo here. I think I tried to, but man, it's all kind of a blur at this point. Well, I mean, that's good. The next demo that I have, I'll make sure I focus on that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough because you're like, we're all such proud geeks about our software, right? So we're like, oh, and it can do this and you can set it up like that, but the customer doesn't care, right? I mean, it's just like they want more customers or they want better emails or whatever.
Right.
So how it gets there is not really important to them. But then at the end, try to bring it back to like, okay, this is what you said you were really wanting. Went through like how you set this up. So now that this is set up, once you integrate it on your site, you can, start getting more customers, which you said was like the most important thing. And then, I mean, I think something that we're still definitely seeing and haven't really mastered, but, and then you have to close, right? You have to say like, okay, what's the next steps for us to get this integrated on your site so you can, start your referral campaign? Not just, okay, that's all I have. Thanks for your time, which is the easy thing to say, but like put it back in their court a little bit, like, okay, what's keeping us from moving forward? Do you want to put your credit card in now to activate your account? Whatever kind of awkward question, and then just sit there. And it's so fucking, even for me that have been doing it a long time, it is so hard. I have to sit on my hands, but I think it's just a waste of our time if we don't do that.
Yeah, and maybe this is where the having their own recapture account would be highly valuable at this point. But for an agency, it's a little different because they themselves are selling to other customers, and so those stores would not, they still have to pitch it to their customers. I'm trying to figure out a way I can actually make that work out,
No,
but
totally. Yeah, it's different for everybody. But I think the thing, like the thing you want to figure out is like what's the next step that they could take and how do you propose to get there with the customer on the call? Because if you hang up, then all bets are off, you know?
right. Yeah, the close is definitely the hard part.
Yeah.
I didn't really know how to close the thing there, but she did say, oh, well, be sure to send me a follow-up email with this, this, and this. And I was like, Of course. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like I said, it was a friendly audience and I got a lot of help there. I think, in the future I will take those same things and turn around and be like, okay, so I'm going to send you a follow-up email with this and this. Is that, does that cover what you think you need here? And, maybe mine will be something like this for a close. Like, so who do you think is a good fit in your agency right now for this tool?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question.
Yeah. And if they say nobody, I'll be like, okay, well, I don't know where to go with that, but
yeah. Yeah. Who do you think in your agency is a good fit for this? What value do you think your customers would get the most out of our tool? You know, something like that, get them talking positive. Yeah, for sure.
Well, there's no doubt that demos are definitely not a natural thing for developer types like myself. So I'm going to have to do more practice to get better at it. And I may just have to ping you on our on email and say, all right, well, I think I fucked this one up. So tell me how I can make it better.
It's tough, man. It's tough. Our first one for Sales Camp, it was a disaster. I didn't have the app open yet. So like I get on the call and I start staring at my screen. I have 27 tabs in Chrome open. And the guy's like, what the fuck is this guy doing? So, I mean, you're going to screw it up. But I mean, that was one of the cool tips in the article by Stella here was have a bunch of tabs open for the shit that takes a long time to load in your app. Like if you have analytics that takes, like it has to go ping the server and run the query or whatever and come back, have that done already in another tab. Because they don't care. You can say, okay, and this is the dashboard. And then over here is what it looks like once you have all your stuff done. And this is the analytics.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, they don't care. So, you know, the one other thing I would say, Dave, and we're not doing this yet, but I need to talk to Mike about it, is to use something like Bluetick to follow up with customers after a demo. Because even if you don't get like exactly a close or a solution or next steps, you got to follow up with them. We are not even using a CRM at this point, so I don't keep track of them there, but you gotta have a place and a way to follow up with them. And if you could build conditional autoresponders and something like Bluetick to say, hey, we had a call yesterday. I was wondering if you had any questions, would love to move forward. Hey, you know, a couple of days later, wanted to point out this thing or these few things that might help you on your way. I think something like that could be really valuable. And then at the end, you got to get to like, if they don't convert, why? And, you know, they should, you would hope they'd be really honest with you about this. And they'd be like, you know, your shit doesn't work, or I don't want it, or your pricing's weird or whatever. And that's really valuable. It's better than all the people that come to your website and just leave, right? If a person tells you that, that could be a good potential customer. And they, you know, that's like the best source of data for you. So if they say no, ask why, even if it's, you know, it's going to suck because it's your baby. They don't like your baby.
Yeah. Your baby's ugly. And you just got to hear that. I love the thing that you put in our notes here that says about asking tough questions. Of course, when you put the question down that you have here, the first thing I thought of was this used car salesman that says, so what's it going to take to get you into this car today there? You know, but I mean, that's a solid, tough question to kind of put the customer on the spot to say, what is it going to take to get you as a customer at this point? If they are like, I'm never going to be a customer, that's great feedback right there. Like, and you can find out, well, okay, so why is that? But if they say, well, we need X, Y, and Z. And if X, Y, and Z are things that are reasonable that can be, you know, you can take away as obstacles, great, then you've got yourself a customer. And if they're like totally unreasonable, then you can say, you know, maybe we're not a great fit for you. Or you can say, hey, look, it's going to take us a little while to work on X, but Y and Z, we can do this and we're done. Maybe that helps build your roadmap. You know, I love that question because of where it can drive you and the fact that it doesn't leave you in ambiguity land, ambiguity land, whatever the hell you would say that is. Ambiguousness.
Yeah. And I think like I had a sales coach when I was back, you know, corporate selling stuff all the time. And he says, it has to sound good coming out of your mouth, right? So like some things that I might say wouldn't sound good coming from you or from whatever, who else in our world. but like figure out, I think, your version of what would it take to get you in this car, right? Like, you know, let's get your credit card on file here so that your campaigns don't get turned off. Or, you know, the next step would be to activate your account. Are you ready to do that now? Whatever. But yeah, you need to get like a yes or a no, right?
Right. Or in Stelly's terms, get him to a yes or fuck off.
A fuck off, right. That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd love to hear what other folks are doing for demos. I think this is a really, it's challenging. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It's challenging. You're putting yourself and your product out there and people are saying no directly to you. So it's tough. I think for everybody who does it, but I think it's a super valuable way of learning about your customers and your industry and your product and everything. So highly encourage it. Even if you have self-service sign up, I put an open call to have a call, like an open invitation to have people have a call with me in our Castos onboarding emails. And I've had a handful at this point, but yeah, I think there's nothing against having a demo with self-service as like something that's purely optional. It might be a cool way to start for some folks.
Yeah. And in fact, I found another way that's sort of like the same sort of thing. So I had one of my customers that was saying, hey, you know, you must be a conversion rate expert, to which I, you know, snickered to myself as I read that email. I was like, well, okay, I do know something about this. I don't know what I've ever called myself an expert about it. But the fact that she doesn't know what's going on with her store and this conversion rate, and she's overwhelmed by all this information, she's like, so would you be willing to do some consulting for me? I was like, I jumped at the chance, because here I've got an open conversation with a customer and I can start to ask about what's going on in their store and what are they struggling with and what do they not, you know, where this conversion fits into it. And that's not necessarily a demo. She's actually been a customer for, I don't know, 9 months or something like that. Mm-hmm. So she's been there a long time. She knows the value of it. She gets all of that. But now I get like this great demo-like environment where I'm finding out about what's going on with her and I'm getting a chance to see, is there something that Recapture can do that can improve to make her and other customers' lives better?
Yeah.
So that I'm looking forward to that. She actually had to reschedule on me last week. I would have had two in one day. I'm glad it turned out to be one, because the first one kind of threw me for a little bit of a loop afterwards. I felt a little discombobulated, but then she had all kinds of logistic stuff go wrong. But now I'm excited to see that coming up actually this week. So,
awesome.
You know, it doesn't have to be a demo call. You can do other kinds of calls with customers and say, hey, you know, I'd be willing to give you some free consulting. I just want to talk about your business and see what's going on. And people love to talk about their own stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. For sure. No, that's great.
Yeah. So if you've got any other questions or you've done a demo and you had something that's totally different that's working for you, we'd love to hear from you. So shoot us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. If you're loving the show, we always appreciate a review in iTunes. There's a link at the bottom of the page here. And we hope you have a great week. Until we talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.